Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Alternatives exist.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Producing this thing is Rob Britton. How you guys doing today?
Doing well. Good to see you guys. What's going on?
Doing fantastic. Today is April Fool's Day. We'll do something for that. Certainly not in the way that you would anticipate. We'll do that coming up in about 30 minutes or so. We'll have a brand spanking new Levine's List, and the world has been telling the greatest fairy tale ever told. We'll talk about that coming up in about 20 minutes or so. I want to share a tweet with you guys very quickly, just listening to the commercials and then talking about what's going on in New York City. Something kind of similar is happening in Kansas City. Mayor Quinn Lucas announces that Kansas City will be closing its dog parks and putting up street barricades in some parks. He says that it's not punitive, but it is because some people are still congregating in those areas. He was on Action 41 News earlier today. People got the parks closed. Is that how you're reading this, Sean Levine? Is that how you're hearing this? The people got the parks closed.
Have you seen the parks?
They gave you a lot of freedom and leeway, and now you guys went and got the parks shut down.
There was only a few places to go. The park was one of them. A lot of people decided that they were going to do that at the same time, and this was only a matter of time. You sound surprised. You were telling me about Loose Park and how packed it was last week. I went to Shawnee Mission Park, and I'm not exaggerating, including people's dogs, so dogs and humans combined, there had to be 500 of them there the other day in relatively close proximity. This was bound to happen.
So you guys have ruined the parks. I just want to go ahead and tell you this. You couldn't heed the social distancing warning. You're right. People, the city and created an exception. People abused the exception. Now you can't take your dogs anywhere. Now I hope you have your own yard because there's no dog parks for you to go to. So that is the latest in Kansas City, Missouri. Let's start today's show a little bit differently. Because I don't know if you saw this or not. Today is the anniversary of the movie The Sandlot. Some people consider that to be the greatest kid sports movie of all time. There's certainly some other movies that would be in the conversation. A movie like The Mighty Ducks, Little Giants might be in the conversation. But a lot of people hold Sandlot in that regard as the best sports movie that is about children. Over the next 4 hours, Sean Levine, I am going to induct kid athletes into the Drive Hall of Fame. So my goal over the next 4 hours is to create our own Drive Hall of Fame on this day.
Are these real kid athletes or are these kid athletes from movies? Like, is Danny Almonte about to get in?
No, Danny Almonte wouldn't qualify because he was not a kid. He was a 37-year-old man when he was competing in the Little League World Series. These are all television and movie kid athletes that I'm going to induct into the first ballot of the Drive Hall of Fame. The first person that I would like to introduce into the Drive Kid Hall of Fame. She was part Bobby Boucher, part Carrie Strug. She is Icebox from the Little Giants.
Sure you want to do this, Becky?
Call me Icebox. Hey, Icebox. Kick some butt. Call me Becky.
Icebox might have been the best kid defensive player of all time. And when you think about the great kid athletes of all time, Icebox has to be on there. She could have been Danica Patrick. The whole movie, she's driving around in a go-kart. And then when she's out there on the field, she was basically Brian Urlacher. I'm putting Icebox from Little Giants. She is going to be the first inductee into the Drive Kid Athlete Hall of Fame.
Becky the Icebox O'Shea is legendary, and she absolutely deserves to be the first inductee in whatever the hell you're calling this Hall of Fame with no sports going on. I think it's a great idea. But the best defensive kid player in any kid movie, what was the brother that had the knuckle puck in Mighty Ducks?
Keenan. I don't know what his name in real life or in the movie
was. Whatever his name was, hit us up, 69306. That kid, He could play some pretty good D. He wasn't the best skater, but he took up a lot of space.
We'll see if he makes the Drive Kid Hall of Fame. Right now, Icebox is the only one that's in there. Again, Icebox showed versatility that I don't think we've seen before. She went out there. She overcome the odds. People think that football is a man's game. Becky O'Shea told us that was not the case. She had a little bit of self-doubt there, and I was going to knock her and penalize her for not participating in the first half of games. But if we're not going to penalize Sammy Watkins for missing a majority of the games, how can I penalize Becky O'Shea for not showing up when her team needed? We say all the time, it's not about if you're good in the first or the second quarter. It's about what you do down the stretch. And she had an epic goal line stand. Her and Spike meet at the goal line, and she wins that battle. There's no person I'd rather nominate for my Drive Kid Sports Hall of Fame than Becky O'Shea from Little Giants.
Remember the kid in Little Giants, the littlest kid that has the snot bubble? You know what I'm talking about, right? You know he's a local. Like, there's a chance we could probably get him on the show.
I had no clue.
If Rob's doing his job before 6 o'clock, I don't know the guy's name. All I know is that somehow I ended up at his house one time. I was, like, randomly friends with his older brother. We're down in the basement, and sitting next to me, I'm like, wait a minute. And this is like 2 years after the movie came out. I'm like, wait, hold on. Is that the, and everybody's like, yeah, you didn't know. So I don't know his real name. I don't know what he's done since then, but I do know that at one point, I want to say he lived in Leawood. It was a big ass house is all I can remember. Maybe we can get that guy on the show.
We could certainly work to try to get him on the show. I would love to have him on the show. The next person that I'm going to induct into the Kids Sports Hall of Fame is, you know that sometimes bullpen roles can be very finicky, very fluctuating. We've seen a guy like Mike McDougal be an all-star 1 year and then a virtual no-name the next. But if you want to talk about a 1 year better than Eric Gagne, better than Mariano Rivera, better than even Wade Davis in 2014 and 2015, Henry Rowengartner from Rookie of the Year.
Somebody just threw a frozen rope from the bleachers to home plate. That's got to be 435 feet.
Duncan, bring me that arm.
If there's any city that can really appreciate a quality bullpen arm, there's not any city in America where your seventh inning guy is a celebrity. You guys remember back in 2014, hell, we even knew the long relievers names on that bullpen. So this is a city that appreciates great special teams, as we saw with Dante Hall, and they appreciate quality arms coming out of the bullpen. You can't give me a better arm that if the bases were loaded in the bottom of the ninth, and you're tapping your right arm to bring somebody in from the pen. There's nobody I'd rather have in the history of sports than Henry Rowengartner. He makes my Drive Kid Sports Hall of Fame.
No, Henry Rowengartner absolutely deserves to be first ballot. Although, if we're being real, there are certain movies that withstand the test of time. And then there are certain movies that you go back and watch as an adult. And you're like, how in the hell did the younger me think that this was good and entertaining? Be real with me, man. When's the last time you watched Rookie of the Year?
I've not watched Rookie of the Year in a very long time.
It's terrible. I watched it a couple of weeks ago with my niece and nephew. I made it about halfway through the movie, and I ducked the hell out. That movie sucks. Again, it's a classic. Rowengartner deserves to be on the team, but there are certain movies, like Willy Wonka, for example. I could watch that tomorrow and still enjoy it. This is not one of those movies necessarily that's held up, in my opinion.
The last kid that I'm going to put in the first wave of the Drive Kid Sports Hall of Fame. This is the first ringer in kids athletics. You know how when Deion Sanders, how we saw him go from the Cowboys to the 49ers, and that shifted the balance in the power of the NFC, and that one dynasty ended and then another dynasty emerged? That's the same thing that happened in the Mighty Ducks with Adam Banks.
Rules, Adam Banks should be playing for District 5.
My son is a hawk, not a duck.
Is this your doing, Gordon?
I'll expect to see him at our next game. We'll have a uniform waiting for you.
No way!
My son would rather not play than play for your team.
Fine, if that's the way you want it. But remember, if Adam plays for the Hawks, he'll have to forfeit every game for the rest of the season. Boy, I'd hate to see that.
I mean, we don't really think about how trash Gordon Bombay was. Number one, he got a DUI. Why was he even allowed to be around kids in the capacity that he was in to avoid jail time? He should have been in jail. That's number one. And then number two, aren't you supposed to play kid athletics for the love of the game? He found some loophole. He found some mailbox that was moved to take a kid off the team that he wanted to play to join his team. But you know what? Adam Banks, like a true competitor, overcame that triumph. And then the balance of power shifted from the Hawks to the Ducks. He was the first ringer. We all have seen that ringer. You all have seen, and you play pickup basketball, at least when we could go outside and do all those kind of things, how one day some guy just randomly shows up who's never been on the team and just magically drops 30, and you're trying to figure out where this guy came from. That was Adam Banks. So the first three people I'm putting in the Drive Kids Sports Hall of Fame: Icebox from Little Giants, who was basically Bobby Boucher, Henry Rowan Gardner, who was the greatest closer that ever lived, and Adam Banks, the first ringer in youth sports. Those are the first three members in the Hall of Fame.
Was he by far the best Mighty Duck? Was he the best player on the team?
Not even close.
Okay, just asking. No love for close. Fulton Reed or Goldberg the goalie or Jesse Hall or any of them?
Those guys didn't have the skill.
Connie Moreau?
Like, Adam Banks could have been in the NHL. Adam Banks was a total all-around and complete player. He could do everything. He could pass, shoot, score, great leadership. We saw that he was a great clubhouse guy. He didn't come in being a distraction. He could have came in with very diva demands, you know, and played through injury.
He's pretty much everything you could ask for
in a
player.
He might be the greatest child of all time. What's that? It might go Michael Jackson, Adam Banks, if we're talking about great kids.
Was he good enough to beat Iceland? I asked because I don't remember. Did they end up beating Iceland?
Yes, they beat Iceland.
Okay, just asking.
So that is the first round of the Drive Kid Hall of Fame.
Those are all absolute shoe-in first ballot Hall of Famers. I can't see how anybody would have issue with any of those three.
If you have someone you would like to suggest, text in. Text line 69306. I've got more people. By the end of the day, we will come to our complete first ballot of the Drive Kid Sports Hall of Fame. Speaking of kids, there is something absolutely amazing that's going to happen next week on Twitter. I'll tell you what it is coming up. So Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high.
I've got incredible news for you guys.
Yeah?
LeVar Burton is going to read books on Twitter to us all.
Hey!
To get us through this stressful time, LeVar Burton is going to get on Twitter and he is going to read books. He's going to read books for kids. He's going to read books for adults. Where has this been? I would have done this in non-quarantine times. You're telling me that LeVar Burton's going to sit down and read me Redfish, Bluefish? There wasn't a market for this before. Reading Rainbow is one of those shows, Sean, that everybody loves. Like, maybe I'm the only one that has this happen to. Every football season, I realize how good of a show 60 Minutes is. Like, no one watches 60 Minutes outside of football season, but they tell you the entire 3 o'clock game, coming up next, we've got this explosive story, and then your television magically stays on after the game is over, and you watch the first 15 minutes of 60 Minutes, you're like, damn, this show's kind of good. Nobody hates 60 Minutes. I feel like Reading Rainbow is that exact same show. Nobody hates Reading Rainbow. It's an amazing show.
It's a great show. The only problem with Reading Rainbow is that now this song's going to be stuck in everybody's head for the next at least 24 to 48 hours. But yeah, when it comes to the actual production, there was nothing like when the teacher would wheel out the old TV and what was that, like probably third grade, fourth grade, and you'd hear this crap coming on in the background, the lights would go out, and then you had like 30, 45 minutes just to chill, sit back, relax, and enjoy some LeVar Burton. Yeah, there's nothing like it.
We don't really talk enough how, remember we were talking about TGIF when we were talking about the show Dinosaurs?
Oh, yeah.
PBS's heyday, they had a monster slate. Reading Rainbow, Wishbone, Sesame Street, Arthur.
Yeah.
They had an incredible slate on PBS. I mean, that's ESPN at its peak. That's MTV at its peak. That's TGIF Friday at its absolute peak. You can't find me a network that's put together four better shows than that that have stood the test of time. We're still using Arthur memes 15 minutes or 15 years after the show is ended. PBS, maybe the greatest channel ever.
Didn't they also have Mr. Rogers?
They did have Mr. Rogers.
I mean, you're forgetting about the second best show, the second best kid show probably of all time.
You're right. My bad. I'm wrong here.
I would go Sesame Street 1. This is just my list. I like lists. You know, I do the list. I would go Sesame Street 1. I would go Mr. Rogers 2.
I can't argue that.
And I would go Captain Kangaroo 3. Captain Kangaroo got a little bit weird.
Let's calm down. Captain Kangaroo. Let's calm down.
You got a problem with Captain Kangaroo?
It's top four all time, top five.
If we're combining entertainment and education, yeah, I have it at number 3. What do you have ahead of Captain Kangaroo?
Someone on the text line brings up Lamb Chop. Magic School Bus also came on there.
Yeah, those are both good.
I mean, Magic School Bus is an incredible show. Lamb Chop's Play Along? I mean, PBS at its heyday, gave you just 7 or 8 classic shows.
I don't remember Lamb Chops well enough. Did Lamb Chops have other friends, or was the whole
thing? He did Lamb Chop and Friends.
Okay, he had it was Lamb Chop and Friends.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I forgot about another one, actually.
Barney also came on PBS,
damn you,
too.
You got me. You brought me back to 5 seconds.
Barney came on there. Teletubbies came on PBS, too.
Yo, those were all on.
I'm telling you, hits. Bill Nye the Science Guy came on PBS.
Wow.
PBS might be the greatest channel of all time when you now think about it. They had hits.
Greatest channel of all time. MTV had a hell of a run long time. But that run that you just gave us, think about the longevity. Think about the moves that they've made because of all of those kids. Like, every one of those kid shows that you just said, save Sesame Street, I'm pretty sure they've made multiple movies about. And Sesame Street, the way I understand it, is still running.
It's
still a current street that's still doing stuff. So, yeah, now that I think about it for a little while, PBS has to be the most successful channel of all time.
Yeah, PBS in its heyday was just absolutely cranking out hits. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll talk some college basketball. Bill Self went on a podcast to talk about Devon Dotson's legacy. And
Masterpiece Theater? What do you know? Masterpiece Theater.
I've never seen that before.
It's the first nipple I ever saw on television. Masterpiece Theater is great.
Yeah, no, I've never seen that before. Coming up, we'll talk some Kansas basketball. But first, speaking of fairy tales, which that's what Reading Rainbow was, sharing fairy tales, we've turned Michael Jordan into a fairy tale. So ESPN, they're doing this greatest college basketball player of all time bracket. They had Michael Jordan as the greatest college basketball player of all time. What a farce.
I would still side here just slightly with Michael Jordan. That Jordan in his 3 years at North Carolina, for 2 straight years, he was National Player of the Year in 1983 and then 1984. He was on the number one team. North Carolina was dominant throughout his time with the Tar Heels. And even though they only won the championship in 1982 when he was a freshman hitting that iconic shot, I would side just slightly with Michael Jordan.
So the final four of this ESPN contest was Shaquille O'Neal, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson. So those are the final four of the greatest college basketball players of all time. The answer has to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right?
No.
Lou Alcindor is the greatest college basketball player of all time. They went 88-2 while he was at UCLA. They had to create a rule to try to slow down the dominance of Lou Alcindor. I'm not saying he's the greatest basketball player of all time. Jordan certainly became that in the NBA. But if we're taking just what they accomplished at the college level, the answer is Lou Alcindor.
Alcindor wasn't even the best UCLA player in that era. Bill Walton was a better college basketball player than Lou Alcindor. As a matter of fact, there was a 4-year period where I saw 3 college basketball players in the Big 12 that were better than Michael Jordan in college. Michael Beasley, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin were all better college basketball players than Michael Jordan was.
I don't know if I'm willing to say that. I mean, if you go consensus first team All-American multiple years and win a national championship, I certainly don't want to diminish what Jordan was as a college player. I feel like you're hating on Kareem just a little bit here. As a sophomore, 29-16, junior year, 26-17, his senior year, a down year, 24-15, and he shot 64% while he was in college, and they went 88-2 while he was at UCLA, and they won the championship all 3 years. The answer for the greatest college basketball player of all time is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I don't really think it's an argument.
Bill Walton averaged 21-16-6, and his team went 87-3, so maybe you're right, because Kareem lost one less college game than Bill Walton, but those guys are probably 2 of the top 10 best to ever play college ball.
Coming up next, we'll talk about Devon Dotson and Marcus Garrett. Marcus Garrett, who won Defensive Player of the Year, and Self said some really interesting things on a podcast about Dotson's legacy as a Jayhawk, and today is April Fool's Day. We'll talk about it coming up. So Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2-6.
Back in on the Drive, coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll do something with April Fool's Day. We'll do that coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll also get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. Some college basketball news trickling in as the season has been canceled. Marcus Garrett has been named Defensive Player of the Year. Sean is someone who is a big Kansas fan. How would you rate his defensive ability when you think of some of the great on-ball defenders they've had at Kansas? Guys like Russell Robinson, guys like Mario Chalmers.
Oh, when it comes to on-the-ball defender, probably the best I've seen. I'm trying to think about it. I mean, Russell Robinson probably had the fastest hands that I've ever seen. Obviously, down low, KU's had some real special guys. Think about Jeff Withey. He led the Big 12 in block shots a couple of years. Thomas Robinson. But as far as on-the-ball defenders go, Marcus Garrett's probably the best. Now, his offensive game still has a lot of work left. He improved his jump shot and his ball handling as the year went along. Here's my question with Marcus Garrett. With all the stuff going on right now in the world and the way that the NCAA handled the tournament this year, where there were some guys in theory that were kind of like Marcus Garrett that might be an NBA draft pick, kind of a fringe second round type player that decided to come back to improve their draft stock and to play in the NCAA tournament. Well, those guys didn't get a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, which makes me wonder if this year, guys like Marcus Garrett who have a decision, should I come back, lead my team to a Final Four, hopefully for us KU fans, or should I go pro? If they don't know if there's going to be a tournament again or even a season again, and the alternative is going to the NBA, so essentially you could go to one league with a chance of making money. You could go to another league, the NCAA, if you will, with a chance to not only not play, but not make any money. I think there's a bunch of guys who are going to go pro because of this.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really difficult to go pro if you're a fringe guy like Marcus Garrett. Like, I'm trying to think of what his NBA ceiling would be. I would say someone like Patrick Beverley. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a good offensive player. And with the way that the NBA is really starting to go, where you got to be a guy that can knock down jump shots and you got to be a guy who can shoot. And he shoots 28% from the college three-point line, so he's not really one of those NBA offensive players. But he is a really strong defensive player. That there's a role for those kind of guys in the NBA. There just aren't those many of those kind of players, and it's about finding the right team and the right situation. And I mean, it's been a grind for Patrick Beverley too. I mean, Patrick Beverley for the first 4 years out of college didn't play in the NBA, then caught on with the Houston Rockets and then made it. I think it'd be foolish for Marcus Garrett to try to declare for the NBA right now. Like, you don't have any of the offseason things to kind of showcase your skills and showcase your abilities. Like, he's just a 4 year kind of player. Now, Dotson, to me, he's a very interesting guy, especially because this year's class wasn't as strong as years past, but you won't have the tournament to prove yourself. You won't have any of the pre-draft workout. I would say I'm really curious to see what Dotson's going to do, but I've never for a second thought that Garrett was going to leave early.
Yeah, Dotson's gone. I mean, Dotson is
I don't know. Like, Dotson, to me, is a little bit of a weird thing. Again, last year he was on the fence, and he said, I was only going to leave if I was a guaranteed first-round pick. He had a great year this year, but again, with all the stuff right now that's going on, and you don't have the ability to compete and do the workouts and the things that would kind of increase your draft stock. Like, I kind of think more guys are going to be on the side of staying in school. Think about it. No Power 5 coach got fired this year. There's just so much uncertainty right now in the landscape of college athletics. I would tend to side with the caution of staying in school, continuing to have that protection, because once you leave and hire an agent, who knows what it's going to be overseas for you to try to go get money. So if you're a guy like Dotson, you don't get drafted, or you get drafted in the second round, so you don't get that guaranteed money. You don't have the fail-safe of the EuroLeague and some of those other overseas options.
No Power 5 coach has gotten fired yet, but remember, we're supposed to be in the final round of the NCAA tournament right now, so I certainly think some guys are going to end up losing their jobs. And do you believe what you said, that these guys aren't working out? Like, yeah, we haven't seen it, and they're not supposed to be, but do we think the guys that play basketball, especially in the NBA, I know we're talking college ball, but I know there's this restriction locally and nationally, we're not supposed to be doing certain things. You just talked about they're shutting down the dog parks in Kansas City. Do we really think the guys that their job is to condition their body and hoop probably have private basketball courts in their basements and backyards? We don't think they're getting together games?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the NBA they're doing so. I don't really know many college players that are doing that. I certainly think guys that are staying in shape now. But, man, playing around with your boys and then conditioning yourself to get ready for the NBA draft, to me, are very different things. If I was a player who was 100% going to be a first-round draft pick, I would leave. A kid like Obi Toppin that still has eligibility, yeah, I wouldn't come back to school. But if I'm somebody like Marcus Garrett, who I don't think gets drafted this year, if I'm somebody like Dotson, that's probably not a lottery pick, given everything that's happened and not having the ability to play in the tournament and then do the typical draft workout stuff, I would come back if I was Dotson.
Right now, the NBA players are the big winners. So if people are wondering what's happening to their money, what the NBA's decided to do, at least for the time being, since they're not playing games, is pay the players less 1% of their salary. So these guys aren't playing. They're chilling like Matt Dillon on penicillin. And they're making 99% of what they would have made if they were actually playing. I don't know if that's going to continue. There's talk where these guys are probably only going to end up getting 75% of their game checks. But I think that any of us in this very uncertain world, a lot of people that aren't considered essential or even are that are working right now, there's so much unknown right now. I think any of us would take 99% of our salaries and not have to go into work. The NBA players are winning this thing right now.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about April Fool's Day. But first, Bill Self went on the Jay Hawker podcast to talk about the legacy of point guard Devon Dotson.
Well, I think toughness, and he's a winner. Hey, Devon Dotson, I mean, he was highly recruited. Don't get me wrong when we recruited him. I mean, he was McDonald's All-American. He was highly recruited. But people didn't project him to be a one-and-done guy. And last year he had a very good freshman year. It was solid. But there were some things he still had to do to tighten some things up. And he worked really hard. And he's an unbelievable competitor. He liked it when it counted the most and when it was the hardest. I always respect him for that and everything. But to your point, it's a little bit incomplete.
So that was Bill Self. He went on the Jayhawker podcast. If we want to talk about individual players that maybe got cheated the most in this experience when it came to not having an NCAA tournament, not having a Big 12 tournament, it's probably Devon Dotson and Udoka Azubuike. Both guys, I think, were trending in the direction. I think Udoka was almost a certainty to have his name up there with Wilt Chamberlain, Paul Pierce, Nick Collison, the all-time greats. And Dotson, if you put together a really solid NCAA tournament and this team won the national championship like a lot of people thought they could have had, I mean, Dotson would have certainly been one of the players that was eligible and in the conversation to be up there. Now, who knows with Devon Dotson? If he declares for the NBA draft this year and he doesn't come back to Kansas, he has maybe the most incomplete legacy of any Kansas player we've seen outside of Joel Embiid. Like, I'm just trying to think of a KU player in recent memory. Obviously, very different circumstances for Dotson and Embiid on why their careers had the uncertainty at the end of it, but I can't think of any Kansas basketball player who was trending to look like Devon Graham or trending to look like Frank Mason, who then it just ended the way that it did with Devon Dotson.
I mean, I don't know if he was going to be Frank Mason or even Devontae Graham or Sharon Collins or Kirk Heinrich. He was certainly one of the really good KU guards. There's no question about that. Although, I don't know if his name was ever going to be up in the rafters. I mean, is Ben McLemore's name ever going to be up in the rafters, or is it? Same thing with like Andrew Wiggins. Guys that only stuck around for a year in the case of those guys, or technically two for Ben McLemore. Those guys put up as good of stats as Devon Dotson. I don't know if they were around long enough. So you're right about Doak, because he stuck around for 4 years. If KU went on to win a national championship, somebody was going to get their jersey in the rafters, so it was probably going to be him. My question about Dotson in the NBA, is he going to take that next step? Frank Mason didn't take that next step. Andrew Wiggins, to some extent, really hasn't improved all that much. Thomas Robinson never took the next step. Ben McLemore, he's kind of been the same guy since he was a top five draft pick. I wonder if Devon Dotson's going to be one of those guys, or a Devontae Graham, where all of a sudden his first year he's okay, and then he really blossoms in the league.
I'll push back a little bit on Devon Dotson. I mean, this year he was a consensus All-American. Both years he went to school, he made All-Big 12. He was on the All-Freshman team last year. Who knows what they would have done in the NCAA tournament? I mean, you'd think Kansas was going to be the favorite to win the NCAA tournament and win the tournament.
Well, McLemore and Wiggins were also everything that you just said.
Yeah, but those guys only played one season, though. Dotson would have stayed for two and had a chance to go to the Final Four and a chance to win a national championship. I mean, a lot of it's dependent on knowing how the story ends. And
absolutely,
we don't know how it ends with Devon Dotson. But if this team had gone to a Final Four, Dotson was there 2 years, 2 years in a row. He made first team All Big 12, was a consensus All-American this year. Man, Dotson would have had a really strong case of being up there. I mean, he would have been very similar to Marcus Morris to me in that regard. Now, Morris stayed for 3 years where Dotson would have been for two, but Morris was only All Big 12 two times, won Big 12 Player of the Year the one time, never played in the Final Four. Dotson would have had a very Marcus Morris-ish case to me.
Yeah, I mean, he might, like you said, depending on how it ended, if KU had a Northern Iowa VCU Bucknell type upset early on, then neither of these guys are really going to be remembered. KU's had a lot of great players to talk about, Udoka Azubuike and Devon Dotson. Now, if they go on and, let's say, win a national championship, then we'll talk about them the same that we would do like Shady and Brandon Rush and Mario Chalmers and Darrell Arthur and Darnell Jackson. It's completely different when you win a national championship. That kind of freezes time for KU fans.
Coming up, we'll get into a brand spanking new Levine's List, but it's April Fool's Day. Let's celebrate it.
Indeed it is. So I'm going to ask you guys a funny man or woman. I just want you to tell me if the person is overrated, underrated, or rated about right. Let's start with Will Ferrell.
This is where I think Will's a little bit interesting. I think he is overrated as an actor. I think he's properly rated as a comedian. I thought he was really funny on Saturday Night Live. I think his movies are really hit or miss, and they're somewhat of an acquired taste. I love Step Brothers. I don't really think Anchorman's that funny, and people think that's one of his funnier movies. I would say as an actor, I think he's overrated. As a comedian, I think he's properly rated.
You didn't like Anchorman.
I did not think Anchorman was funny at all.
Will Ferrell.
I think he's properly rated. I think part of the problem with Will Ferrell, why people think he's overrated, he's saturated the market. He's in so much stuff, which creates a problem because then you leave yourself open to more failures and people think he's elite, but I think he's properly rated as a good comedic actor.
Overrated, underrated, or about right, David Letterman.
Oh, properly rated. I think David Letterman is one of the five greatest late night hosts of all time, and I think all people kind of consider that. I think he's a really good interviewer. I really enjoyed the stuff he's done post his career on Netflix where he does those sit-down 30-minute to hour-long interviews with people. I really enjoy that show. I would say properly rated with Letterman. I think he's great.
I think he's underrated because of recency bias. I think you ask most people how good was Letterman. They say, yeah, he was pretty good, but he was really good, but people forget that because he's not in the zeitgeist anymore. So I think he's underrated.
You know, Letterman was the first person to ever do a list, and I was the second person to ever do a list. So I didn't come up with it, but there have only been two of us to ever do a list. But Larry David.
I'm actually not much of, like, I'm not super knowledgeable. Like, I don't really watch Curb. I don't really watch Seinfeld. I think he gets held in proper regard, so I'd say properly rated, but I'm not the best person to ask about Larry David.
Yeah, I think he's properly rated. He has two elite shows, and he's looked at as an elite comedic mind. I mean, that's the proper rating. I would say Larry David's spot on. I love Larry David, too.
I think he's a little bit underrated because of what you just said. Seinfeld, the most successful comedy of all time, Curb Your Enthusiasm, started off with kind of a cult following, and now it's probably become a top 20 comedy of all time also. And the fact that, if I'm being honest with myself, I think I'm going to look like Larry David when I'm old, so I think Larry David's a little bit underrated. Adam Sandler.
First half of his career, properly rated. Second half of his career, overrated. There's like a clear line in the sand when it comes to Adam Sandler movies. His first probably 7 to 8 movies you could probably put up against any comedians of all time, not named Eddie Murphy, and I think it holds up pretty well. Maybe it was around Big Daddy or somewhere in that.
The Longest Yard.
I actually think The Longest Yard's funny.
Big Daddy was great.
No, I'm saying, I think after Big Daddy is when there's like a clear line for Adam Sandler, and he's just not the same person anymore, but he still gets this top billing.
What's the last really good movie that Adam Sandler made?
Uncut Gems.
Yeah, some people would argue Uncut Gems. I really like Grown Ups. I think the first Grown Ups is funny. The second one I don't really enjoy. I think the first Grown Ups is funny.
I think he's probably overrated, and I think Carrington's on to something here, because like for a while he was everything. Everything he did was great. SNL was great. Big Daddy, Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, all great. But people treat him like he's still pumping out that level of movie. I didn't like Grown Ups. Grown Ups 2 exists in the world. I mean, there's like 7 or 8 romantic comedies with Jennifer Aniston. They're all not that good. I mean, I think he's overrated because people look at him like he's still pumping out Billy Madison yearly.
That Netflix one with Jennifer Aniston, pretty average.
Yeah, I mean, he's made 11 of the last 12 movies he've made have been incredibly average movies. I'm with you. I saw that movie. So, I mean, he made Big Daddy in 1999 was when Big Daddy. Like, since 2000, if we had to make a list of the good movies that he's been in.
Yo, Big Daddy's 21 years old.
Yeah, it came out in 1999. Ugh. I don't really think there's many movies we can name that you would say that is a good movie from Adam Sandler. The last movie that I think people all enjoyed was I Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. I actually think that movie's kind of funny.
It's April Fool's Day. We're talking funny people here on The Drive. Overrated, underrated, or about right? Sir Charles Barkley.
Overrated? I think that TNT and Turner, one of the flaws that they've done was they tried to expand Barkley instead of just kind of keeping him in his lane. He's really funny commentating on the NBA.
That's a good point.
He shouldn't be doing college basketball. He doesn't watch college basketball. Not really knowledgeable about college basketball. And then they try to have him talk about all these different things. I just don't really think Chuck is knowledgeable enough to speak on. If we're talking Charles just on the NBA, I think he's great. I think that Turner tried to turn that kind of unfilteredness into other avenues, and I think he's really struggled. So I think he's overrated in that regard.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's overrated because he's great next to Shaq and Kenny. It's like it's A-plus television. Like, he's been on SNL a few times, and it's just bombed. Like, if he's not next to Shaq and Kenny, I'm just not interested in what he's saying. So he's overrated.
Yeah, in college basketball, it's tough to watch him because you're watching knowing that he knows nothing about it. Like, he openly knows. Remember we called Ryan Leaf and we tried to get him on the show? Remember what his response was? Well, I'll come on, but I don't watch NFL football. At least he was honest with us. And there's Charles Barkley that they put on a college microphone when he says he doesn't watch college basketball. No, I'm good on that. You're not that funny.
Yeah, and I mean, and just in that sense, what they have him doing isn't really the funny role. To Rob's point is why inside the NBA works is you have the straight guy in Ernie. You have the really knowledgeable basketball guy in Kenny. Like, Kenny knows the NBA and college basketball inside and out. And then Chuck's the funny guy and Shaq's also the funny guy. Like, that was the perfect role, but when they put him on the NCAA, they try to have him be an analyst, and that's not even what he is on Inside the NBA, so I just don't think they have him in the right role.
Daniel Tosh.
I'm not super knowledgeable with Tosh.0. It's not really my kind of show. So, I mean, I guess I would say overrated, but I've maybe seen like 3 episodes of the show.
I don't know what the perception of him is nationally. I think he's pretty funny, so I'd say properly rated. I don't hear anyone being like, man, that guy's the best. But I don't hear anyone saying, man, he sucks. So properly?
His show's really good. Tosh.0 is great, and it's had lots of longevity. His stand-up leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, I've maybe seen 3 episodes of it. It wasn't really that funny to me, so I stopped watching it, so I can't really comment on my man's discography.
Are you familiar with the comedian Dave Chappelle?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Dave's underrated. Dave might be the funniest human being of all time.
Funnier than Eddie Murphy?
The funniest human being of all time.
I just think he's properly rated for exactly what you said. I think he is one of the funniest people of all time, and everyone acknowledges that. That's a proper rating. You can be great and be properly rated. That's what he is.
That's why we're playing the game. Stephen Colbert.
I like Stephen Colbert. Properly rated? I think he gets the respect that he deserves. Properly rated. Yo, I don't really know his work outside of the show.
Way overrated.
But I like him on the show. I think he's fine.
I think he's just too smart for me. Way overrated. I literally don't get half the jokes that he's talking about.
I think he's probably properly rated. I think he's a little bit of the victim of the character he played on Comedy Central, because everyone expected him to be X and he's actually Y. But I think he's pretty funny and he does a smart show. So I'd say he's properly rated.
Two left. Go ahead.
I would say when it comes to Colbert, I don't really watch his show a lot. I'm much more of a Fallon person. Like, I really like Fallon. The fact that Fallon can get the most famous people in the world to just play these random games with them, I really enjoy it. But when Colbert kind of gets in his political bag and has like a 7-minute and I click on it, I always enjoy it. I don't mind him. He's fine.
Fallon's not even the funniest late night Jimmy. He's second, though.
He's certainly funnier than Kimmel.
No.
I don't think Kimmel's super funny.
But Kevin Hart?
Slightly overrated.
Yeah.
But I think he's very good. I think the problem with Kevin and why I think his comedy won't age super well is Kevin doesn't really tell a lot of great stories or really react to what's going on. Like, if you've seen one Kevin Hart special, you've really seen all of the specials. They're just a bunch of funny made-up stories that are good, but I think what makes certain comedians so great, like Chappelle, what makes Chris Rock really good is they can take what's currently happening and make something really funny of it. I don't think Kevin really has that ability, and I think he kind of peaked 2 or 3 specials ago. His movies, I think, are fine. Like, he's just kind of found a role. He knows what he is. He knows what his audience likes. He'll keep delivering it. And then at one point, we'll get tired of Kevin Hart's jokes, but he will have made $300 million in the process of it. So I think he's good, but I do think he's slightly overrated.
What Kevin Hart movie did you really like?
I think Ride Along's funny.
It was okay. Yeah, Kevin Hart, Rob?
I say he's overrated. Like you're right. His stand-up specials, you could tell me they're all the same, and I believe you. They're funny, but they're not great. And his movies all top out at average at best. Like, Ride Along's the best, maybe. Central Intelligence, they're all just kind of average. But people treat him like he's this comedic genius. I think that's too much. I think he's overrated.
I just feel like if you've seen enough Kevin Hart, like, I've seen all of the specials. If you've seen, like, the later ones, you can just say, oh, this joke is just a variation of this joke. Like, right. You told this joke, and you substituted the zebra with the raccoon. Like, it's the same concept of the story. So I think that's where it kind of fell flat. Like, I've seen the last 3 Kevin Hart. I actually saw Kevin Hart at the Improv when he was getting ready for the Let Me Explain. So, I mean, it was really cool to see him. That's kind of when I think he was at his peak.
Last one, you're about 60 seconds away from a new Levine's list. Cat Williams, that Tiger went Tiger.
Underrated. I think Kevin Hart. But the thing about Cat Williams, though, is when he was hot, it wasn't very long. He had like a 2 comedy special run where he was maybe the funniest person in America.
I haven't seen him in like, It's been at least probably 6 or 7 years since he's done anything funny, right?
Yeah, no, he hasn't been hot for a while. But, like, when he was hot, he was funny in movies, and he was really funny in stand-up. He just wasn't hot for a very long time. Like, say what you want about Kevin Hart.
He's Mike Jones.
He's been incredibly hot for a 7-year span. Like, Kevin Hart has been on top of comedy, the biggest comedian in the world, or one of them, for the last, like, 7 years. It's not really had Cat Williams. It was an 18-month thing.
See, I agree with it. It's only an 18-month thing, but I'm going to say overrated because of that. People treat him like he's still top of the game. Like, Cat Williams is still awesome. You gotta do something sometime recently and have it be good for me to say, you know what, you're properly rated or underrated. He's not doing anything, and people treat him like he's great.
As an actor or actress or like singer, I agree with what you said. Your career kind of has to continue and be successful. You gotta keep making good music or good art or whatever. As a comedian, I disagree though. If you've got one good special that lives in infamy, There have been plenty of guys that have done that. As long as you're really funny one time and somebody recorded it, then you're funny forever.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think it's kind of like musicians. Like, I just think you're just put in a different category. Like, what makes Chappelle so great is Chappelle's been able to do this at such a high level for 15 years. Like, it's been a long time since Chappelle's show ended, and he's still super culturally relevant. That tomorrow, well, whenever it's all over, if Chappelle said, I'm doing a comedy special at Music Hall, it'll sell out in 3 hours. Like, not many people kind of have that ability. Like, sometimes people just have one good idea, and there's nothing wrong with having the one hit. Like, some people don't even get to that point where they have the one hit. That's what Cat Williams is. Cat Williams was really hot for 2 years. I'm sure he made a lot of money, and he's something, and he did things that people will enjoy for a long time. But I do think the longevity is what separates the all-time greats from the guys who are just all-time good.
Think about how many guys try that, though, and fail at, like, the local improv club. So you can say Cat Williams isn't in the top 1% of comedians ever.
He is, though.
He's in the top 2%. You know what I'm saying?
I'm talking about the difference between all-time good and all-time great. Right. We'll always remember the all-time run. He's not Seinfeld. He's not Eddie Murphy.
I'm just saying those are
the guys that transcended and were able to do it for a substantial period of time. It's hard as a comedian to be hot as Kevin. I mean, Cat Williams did major motion pictures and did movies. Like, yeah, I mean, he was incredible at what he did. His run just didn't last super long. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll continue an argument that we had yesterday. But first, let's get to a brand spanking new Levine's List.
With quarantines going on everywhere, prisons, CDOT, don't know if you saw this, are now putting their prisoners under quarantine. So if you had a cellmate, they're taking your cellie out, they're putting them somewhere else and quarantining y'all for 14 days. Which made me think, what are the best prison movies of all time? Number 10, Con Air. You ever seen Con Air?
Long time ago. I don't really remember it, though.
Number 9, Sleepers. It's an old movie. A lot of people haven't seen it. I want to say De Niro's in, if I remember correctly. Number 8, Escape from Alcatraz. Number 7, The Longest Yard. The original, not the Adam Sandler one we were just talking about. I believe it was Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. He's in the remake, too.
Number 6. You ever seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
No, never seen it.
Phenomenal movie.
That's an underrated movie, by the way. That's a good movie.
Really good movie. Number 5, Malcolm X.
That counts as a prison movie?
Yeah, you know, I thought it'd be a little bit of a stretch, okay, but there's prison involved, wasn't there?
All right.
Okay. Number 4, Cool Hand Luke. That's a prison movie. Number 3, American History X. You ever seen that?
No, I've not seen it. I've heard of it, though. I've not seen it.
Really? That shocks me.
I heard about it as a kid, some of the scenes, and I didn't want to see it.
I think that it swept all the awards that year. That movie was huge when it came out.
I watched Oz on HBO Go, like, every night before I went to sleep. That substituted Law & Order, and I had graphic prison dreams that I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it anymore.
You want to describe one of those to us?
Think about all the things that could happen in prison graphically.
Yeah.
And those were the things I would dream about. Okay. And I did that for 3 consecutive nights.
Ooh.
And I told myself,
that's a long week.
Never again will I ever do that.
You basically serve time.
So I stopped watching.
Oz was one of the first, like, cultural phenomenon shows like that I can think of. Came out around the same time as, like, Sopranos, right? And all that. Number 2, talking prison movies, Green Mile. And I think everybody would agree the best prison movie of all time, widely regarded as the best movie of all time, Shawshank Redemption. That's today's Levine's List.
Coming up next, we had an argument yesterday. We'll continue it. That's next. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.